Welcome to the Mastering Mindfulness Institute, a place to stop diet sabotage and create a life of balance. I'm your host, Gina Werfel, registered dietitian and master of human nutrition. Let's dive in. Hey, you guys, welcome back to the Mastering Mindfulness Institute podcast. Today, we're going to talk about anxiety and what do we do with it? I love this topic. This is going to be so good. I have an amazing guest to jam on this with because I actually have been getting Instagram messages lately from a lot of people who have been saying, I'm just so overwhelmed. I'm so stressed. I have so much anxiety, maybe alternating anxiety and depression, and I don't know what to do with it. And a lot of people who have maybe been going to therapy for years, and they're like, there's something I'm not getting. There's something that I'm missing. And so I think there's such a huge need to understand on a deeper level, what is anxiety? How does it play a role in our lives? And what do we do with it? And I could not think of anyone better than my amazing friend, Will Etheridge. He is a master trained somatic psychotherapist, a human behaviorist, and he really specializes in the relationship to yourself and to other people. And I'm so excited to have him here because Will was actually one of the most really impactful people in my life. I was at a retreat when I met Will, and if we could go back down memory lane a little bit here, when I first met Will, I was at a retreat, and I was actually feeling a ton of internal anxiety and this like inner resistance and just so much that I didn't understand about myself. And I sat down with Will at the start of the retreat, and he absolutely blew my mind and completely changed my relationship to fear. And so what is so cool is he helps people change their perception around their experience. And I actually give Will a lot of credit to why the Mastering Mindfulness Institute is here today, because I had so many fears and anxiety around quitting my job and going fully all in on where my heart, my soul, my passion really is, which is here speaking to you guys today. And Will help me change the relationship to fear and allowing fear and my anxiety to be a beautiful teacher and something that was became like more of my partner instead of my enemy. So I couldn't think of anyone better to talk about this with today. So welcome, Will.
Thank you. I love seeing your face on here.
I know, it's so fun.
You remember that. I remember sitting down with you about fear and, you know, changing your relationship to it. And you did. You actually took the bull by the horns and really went for it. So
yeah, that was a big conversation for me. It really, like, it just completely broke my whole perception. Like, it broke. I thought I understood the world, and I thought I knew what the world was. And I was like, you know what? I remember telling you, I might quit my job, but I just have to get over this fear thing. And I can't quit my job until I get over my fear and deal with my anxiety around it. And you were like, well, what if your fear was actually teaching you something great? And I was like, never thought about that. Weird. And it
rained a little bit.
It broke my whole perception. So I think that that's where your magic is people think that they understand and know, and they have like these things that are holding them back. They can't even see, but then you break their perception on it. And all of a sudden there's so much inner freedom.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's the thing. One of the things I love about my work is that any perception can be changed. And it can be changed. It's like, as another way of putting it, as a way people can understand it, is you can change your story on anything, right? We tell ourselves horror stories. And the moment you tell yourself a horror story, you're going to live in the horror story. We tell ourselves doubt stories. And then we start living in doubt and fear. And then what we're talking about today is the anxiety story that every single human being has. And we have a version of it. And some people have more anxiety than others, but we tell ourselves a story around anxiety. And the beautiful thing is you can actually tell yourself a completely different story about it, and it'll develop a totally different relationship to it.
So how do you think anxiety shows up for most people? Because I think that this has been the number one thing that people have been reaching out about is, I'm so anxious and I don't know what to do with it. How does this like show up for most people, do you think?
So the first important thing that to say is everyone has anxiety. And I think it's important to say that so you don't feel alone in it. think that people deal with have massive anxiety or major anxiety attacks, they feel alone and they feel broken in it. And so the first thing I want to say is that everyone has anxiety and we have levels of it. And you live long enough, you might experience a panic attack, right? You live long enough and you might go through something that really induces serious anxiety. And so I don't know a human being on this planet that does not have or has had anxiety in their life at some point. So that's the first, so people don't feel alone in it. And I think the one thing that I found out about anxiety is we don't have anxiety over stuff we don't care about. If we don't get anxious over things that we don't care about, we get anxious over things that we actually do. And so I found that anxiety is an attempt to create organization around chaos in something we care about.
Wow.
We're attempting to organize it.
I think that's really relatable, especially for people who are on even their journey with their health, because there's a lot of anxiety, I think, around like, what do I do? What do I do? And I think that's a really beautiful point that maybe we don't always know what the next step to take is. But the beautiful part of that is that the anxiety is showing you that something like your health, it's important to you, and maybe not to let it completely stop us and paralyze us and crumble us, but anxiety or fears or that stress around it can show us that this is something that's important to us.
You brought up a really good point. I'm glad you brought up the fear story because it's important. Most people have an adversarial relationship to things they perceive negative. Fears are perceived negative to someone. Anxiety is usually perceived negative. No one is treating it like their friend. No one is treating it like their teacher. So the moment that I perceive something as adversarial, I want to go away from it. It challenges me. It challenges my value system. And so therefore, I want to go away from it. When I go away from anxiety or fear, when I go away from it, I actually don't work with it. And when you don't work with something and you don't contemplate it and you don't investigate it, then it comes back. And sometimes it comes back twofold and threefold, because that fear and that anxiety is a feedback mechanism trying to show something to you that's important. Again, that has some level of chaos in it that you want to organize. I say this all the time to clients. When you organize anxiety, when you organize it and you make sense out of it, anxiety is no more. You've actually created organization around something that was chaotic. You created certainty in it. So the moment you have certainty in something that you're anxious about, there is no more anxiety.
Which is amazing, because it's like what you said, if you are avoiding or if it becomes your enemy, if fear and anxiety becomes your enemy, then you actually start avoiding the things that are the most important to you, which probably then creates even more underlying subconscious anxiety.
Yes, it builds on itself. So it's just that's why I like to people. The moment one of my clients experiences anxiety, I have them ask several questions. What am I anxious about? If you've had anxiety long enough, it might just be a low grade constant anxiety, right? But it has a root, it has a source. And so to ask the question right off the bat, what am I anxious about? Because that's what's important. Right. And if I can, and if I, it's so funny, you ever have anxiety at night and you can't sleep?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Right. That's so common for most people. Because we see it as adversarial, our mind is still trying to figure it out. And so if we keep it in our head and we're trying to sleep and we're spinning on something in 1,001 ways, our mind is still attempting to create organization out of chaos, only it takes 20 times longer than if you were to get up out of bed, ask the question, what am I anxious about? Write it on a piece of paper and then actively try to ask questions around it to organize it. Why is it important? Where am I feeling? Where's the chaos in this?
Mm-hmm.
How can I organize this chaos, right? If I got up out of bed and I did that writing exercise and have all my clients do it, I can literally organize something within 5-10 minutes and I can go back to bed. If I don't and I go to sleep with all that anxiety, I'm not going to sleep well. I feel tired the next day, anxiety will probably still be there, but I'll be less able to actually navigate it.
So you're actually literally starting to organize it as though it was your desk. You're like, let me put this on the sticky note and start organizing the chaos. Yeah. Okay. All right. Yeah, and then absolutely. What can we do with it? Like, how do we start exploring this anxiety? What is it here to tell us? Or what do we start doing with it?
Give me an example of an anxiety you've had.
Oh, man. Okay. So I've had anxiety that I'm not being productive enough.
Okay. Great. So let's say you're spinning on that bed. Mm-hmm. I'm not productive enough. I'm not enough.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. And so if you got up out of bed and you wrote down what the anxiety is, I'm not being productive enough. So immediately your mind's going to go, well, what areas am I perceiving I'm not productive enough? If you stay in bed and you try to, we can only have one thought at a time. If I'm trying to organize a super complex sort of problem in my head and my mind can only think of one thought at a time, it's going to take me forever to figure that out.
Right.
Right.
Stay up all night.
Spin and spin and spin and spin and spin. So if I get up and I ask that question, I write it down, then all of a sudden I've got the three or four areas where I'm not being productive. But I would also ask the question, where are you productive? Because you're productive in some areas and you're not productive in others. So you can start to see the lie that anxiety is telling you that I'm just not productive. There's a lie in that.
It almost kind of makes me feel like I'm lying to myself though. Like, oh, I'm super productive at like doing things that aren't super meaningful. Or like, let's say I'm like, oh man, I only answered one email today. And I like, sure, I'm productive in other things like organizing my pantry and making my bed or hanging out and taking phone calls with friends. But like, does that actually fix my anxiety though? So what do I do with that? That feels like a lie. So being productive, so being like, you are productive. It feels like I'm trying to make myself feel better.
What specific areas are you productive in? Write them down. What areas do you perceive yourself to not be productive in? You have to get that. You have to sift and sort in your mind. That's why it takes so long in bed, because your mind, you have many areas where you're productive and there's areas where you're not. Then you can ask the question, like, do I value this idea of production? Let's say there's an area of productivity in your business. You're not productive. Where do you feel you're not productive?
In the things I hate doing.
Okay. Wow. And what's the thing you hate doing? Let's give me an example.
Like I don't like doing like technical things. Like I don't like building landing page website kind of things, like things that are computery where I'm not interacting with real people. I'm just like doing technical things that I'm not skilled at, that I'm bad at.
So if you wrote that down and you're like, I don't like doing this, can you see that your mind or be like, I don't want to do this. This is not my area of expertise. Mm-hmm. So what's the solution to that problem?
Have someone else do it.
Yes. Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. And then you can go, who can do it? Well, there's Josh.
So I want to challenge you on this one. I want to challenge you on this. So now what about people who are like, I have a lot of anxiety because I know I need to be healthier, but I'm not doing the things that I think that I should be doing. Like no one can make me exercise. No one can make me choose to eat healthier, but I have a ton of anxiety because I'm not doing it.
Okay. Again, I would say get the writing exercise, get the instrument that writes things down so you can see it on a page first and foremost. And then if you are feeling that you're not, like you should be healthy, but you're not, I would do the same thing. What foods are you eating that are healthy? Because we lie to ourselves and say, I'm just blanketly unhealthy. Mm. And that's actually not true. Even if you're eating a celery stick has some level of nutrition to it, correct?
Right.
So I write down all the foods that are nutritional.
You're drinking water. Yeah.
I would write all the other foods that are unhealthy. So I'd first get my mind to sift and sort what's going on. Otherwise, that blanket statement of I'm unhealthy creates anxiety because there's a lie in it going on, one. And two, it's like, well, yeah, I guess I'm just unhealthy. So that doesn't feel good. When you lie to yourself like that and you don't see where you're eating healthy, you don't find the balance in it, then I can work with that. Okay, well, at least I'm healthy in this areas. What about these areas? The McDonald's that I buy, the cheats in the night, like the chocolate at night, right? Then I can start to create a plan. And it might not be like, I might not do that. I might bring it to you. Hey, I had some anxiety. I wrote these down. This is the information I have. Can you help me with this? The expert in this area, just like you delegated doing all the technical stuff to someone, they delegate this to you. I need help with this. This is not my area of expertise. But the moment your mind starts to get organized around something, it creates certainty, either a certainty of action of plan, a certainty of delegation, or the certainty of I was lying to myself. This is where it's healthy and this is actually it's not. It eases my mind because I'm not going, I'm just unhealthy. I'm just a fat cow.
So getting a little bit of clarity. So what I'm hearing you say is that when we have anxiety, something helpful is to get one, organize it, get a little bit clear, put it, make it concrete, put it on paper. What is it that I'm anxious about? And then start changing, shifting our perception or widening our perception on maybe questioning some of the lies that anxiety is creating.
See where the truth is. And just, I always ask the opposite. The anxiety is I am this, I am unhealthy. I am not productive. I immediately go, part of that's true. There's part of your areas where you are unproductive. Like that slows down. And there's actually a lie because there's areas where I don't even know what I said. There's areas where you're productive and areas where you're not. So the moment you sit and sort those things out on a piece of paper, your mind can calm down because you're like you're actually telling yourself more truth and it's more balanced. And then you can start to work with it. And you can start to ask other questions of it. Like you said, I'm not productive on technical. I don't want to do that. The moment you hear yourself say that, I don't want to do that. It's true. Then what do I do with that? I delegate it. And then who do I want to delegate that to? I think I'll call Josh. I think I'll call other web designers to do the landing page. I don't want to do that. I might seek Marine out for our retreat that we're going to do.
By the way, I just want to pause here. If you guys didn't catch, I actually just interviewed Marina. We published her podcast, I think about 2 or 3 episodes ago, which was awesome. So if you haven't listened to that, check out that. It's such a gem of a podcast after this one. She's badass. And I'm finding these badass gems and I'm like, I need you on the podcast. We're all collaborating, the three of us, on a retreat this year. Will be the end of April. I love it. I love jamming with the badasses who I said the same thing to Marina. I was like, you guys should be the ones that are like, you know, sure, you gotta love Tony Robbins. He says some great inspirational things, but the real ninja badasses who can really like go into the mind is like, to have access to you guys is incredible. So little plug there. We're having a retreat this year just to keep going deeper. So let's go a little deeper into anxiety. So like, here's maybe what we can start to do with it. Why do we get it? Why does it create this uncomfortable sensation in our bodies? I know for me, like anxiety was one of the biggest triggers around self-sabotaging my health because I saw it as such a bad thing. It was so uncomfortable in my body and I didn't really know what to do with it. And I think that probably a lot of people experience that. Maybe why do we get anxiety or what is happening in our bodies? What do we do with it other than write it down?
So there's a whole other aspect that I have not talked about with anxiety. And so there's sort of a larger picture on this. And it was a surprise finding for me. I created a process called the identity shift process. And it uses your most negative core belief, where you identify it and then you shake that belief loose. Again, I don't want to go too deeply into that because it's, there's a process where you shake it loose. And then there's a process also, once that's that negative core belief that was created, like as a child in a child's, like a child's mind. So you create most of your negative core beliefs from 0 to 10. you shake it loose by using your adult mind and see how it's just not true anymore for you. It was true as a child. It's not true anymore.
Can you give an example of that? Like what would that look like? Because I know for me, like when I started finding beliefs, like I thought beliefs were truths. Like to me, they felt so true to me. So I was like, no, there's not a thing to be fixed. This is just the way that life is. And it wasn't until I started having some of those experiences or things that you've walked me through. Can you give like an example?
Yeah. So when we form beliefs as children, beliefs are global. And what I mean by that, I'll give you an example of mine. Mine was, I am unlovable. I have a moment in my past, I've been many moments where I wired that belief up. But one of the most crucial moments was when my father was, I was 10, my brother was 13, and we were sitting around the table. And I can't remember how this came up, but at one point my father looked at me, my brother, and then he looked at me and he said, if any of my sons are gay, I'll disown them. Flat out. Wow. And he looked right at me, and I am gay. And I was gay back then, and I knew it, and I was terrified. And I wired up, if I must be unlovable because he would disown me if I'm gay, and I'm gay. So I must be unlovable. So when you wire that up, I am unlovable, there's a global feeling to it. So it affects my thoughts. It affects all of my feelings. It colors them like a lens. It colors my the way that I relate to my actions and my results. It affects everything. So it literally colors my identity.
How did that show up for you in your life with that belief?
In relationship, it's really interesting. There's brilliant strategies that are created in these negative core beliefs. They're not all bad. There's brilliant strategies. And one of them was to endear you to me. So I'm really creative. I'm funny. I have many different characters that come out of me. And I have a beautiful way of endearing you to me. But because I'm unlovable, I could never receive your love and your true attention. I can never actually really receive it.
It was rejected.
So I'm kind of screwed, right?
Mm.
So I did all the things to at least create connection with people, even though I couldn't feel your love because I was unlovable. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So I think that's really interesting because I think a lot of people might not realize that they're identifying with a moment in their past of when they developed I'm unlovable. But I think a lot of people can probably resonate with like I can't receive people's love, or I'm not fully fulfilled by like receiving love. Cause I think that's,
I literally can't.
Yeah. And it's like, why? Yeah. And it's like, why? I think it's so interesting because these beliefs can be hidden.
Mm-hmm.
We might not. Right. You know, so why? For me, yeah. So this is so interesting. Like, how do you find that? Because like for me, I thought like years ago, I thought I'm just really motivated and I'm productive. And I always thought I'm just a very motivated and productive person. But then my motivation and productivity ended up being like abusive to myself. And through doing deeper exploration with you and the community that we've been learning from and that I've learned from has been, the belief is actually I'm not enough unless I achieve a certain amount. But I wouldn't have known that until I've really had somebody help me really unpack that belief. So how can we like start getting these clues of like, I'm not lovable, I'm not enough, or like, how do we find the belief that's creating this reality?
So, you know, I mentioned earlier, everyone has anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone has a cluster of negative core beliefs. And we have a hierarchy. So we actually have the most negative core belief that we wired up as children, because everyone goes through some form of trauma with parents, caregivers, teachers, whatever, growing up, that there is landmines of trauma that happen, and negative core beliefs are shaped through trauma. And so to identify it, I do a process. So I do an identity shift workshop. It's a day long workshop. And it's really actually simple to identify it. But before I say that, the reason you can't identify it is when you have a sort of a negative core belief wire up at 10 years old, over time, that goes from the conscious and shifts into the unconscious or the subconscious. So most people won't be aware that they actually have a negative core belief, or they won't be able to tell you right away what it is, because it's in the conscious, because it was created so long ago. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So what are like some feelings maybe that someone had, like we talked about anxiety, or you noticed that you weren't receiving people's love fully in relationship. Like what are some other signs that people might be experiencing internally that they're like, oh, there's probably a core negative core belief that's actually blocking me right now. Like what are some feelings or something?
To tie it into anxiety, that's why we kind of started off this. To tie it into anxiety, what the surprising finding for me was, is that your most negative core belief is the most disembodying of beliefs. And what I mean by that is, if I am unlovable, I don't really want to be in my body because my body is unlovable. Another negative core belief is I don't matter. I don't want to be in I don't matter. If I don't belong, another negative core belief, I don't really want to be in I don't belong. I don't want to be in my body in that. And so
it's so uncomfortable.
Yeah. You mentioned I'm a somatic psychotherapist. I studied somatics, which means we did 1,001 ways to enter into the body and feel the interior of the body and do the psychology within the body. That's what we learned. But what I would do, and I was unaware of this, is I would go into an exercise, I would go into my body, do the exercise, but I would unconsciously pop back out. So I was actually disembodied in an entire 3-year somatic program and didn't even realize it until I did this belief workshop.
Wow. So anytime we actually want desire to leave our bodies, I mean, could that even be things like using like productivity? Like, could you be using productivity and work as like an avoidance of being in your body, or using food or using different things as a way to like leave your body and during? So those could maybe be clues when you feel like you're using something to leave the connection to your body.
Yeah. If I don't love myself, I'm going to at least want to feel good about myself. So I might overeat.
Because it feels good. It brings a pleasure.
It brings some pleasure out of a lot of unpleasure and of disembodiment. If I'm not in my body because of negative core belief, and I believe most people have a level of disembodiment going on because of negative core beliefs. I've seen this with too many people that I've worked this process through. So I might overexercise. I might abuse my body because I don't feel good about it. So I need to make sure it looks good because it doesn't feel good. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So what it was a huge revelation for me to realize that when I did the belief process on myself, and I was the first one to do it. In fact, me and Alan were sort of created the sort of the beginnings of the workshop. As the more questions that I asked of myself, well, let me back up a little bit just to show you the process. So the process is you have the negative core belief, you shake it loose, and then you think of the opposite. So I was unlovable. So the opposite belief for me is I am now lovable. And so I want to kick the tires now on I am lovable. That was my question. How do I reshape into I am lovable? And so I asked the question, what do I get to be, do, and have now that I'm lovable? And what do I get to be, do, and have in my body? And all of a sudden I was like, well, if I'm lovable, the body's now a curious place to be in. I want to actually be in my body.
This is so amazing. I just want to pause for a second. This is so, so amazing, because when a lot of people start doing this work around getting curious with their food and their body, and they're like, I want to be connected to my body. I want to do what you're doing. And then they start going into their body, and then they're like, why is this so hard for me? I don't understand. Like, why is it not easy to go into my body? And you just nailed it right there, is because we haven't healed the belief that's making it so uncomfortable to actually be present in your body. But when you actually feel in your body that you are lovable or you're worthy or your body is enough, then it might not actually it changes everything. Now you're not like traumatizing yourself by going into your body. You're actually starting to truly heal and work with it.
When I eat on I'm lovable, I slow down. My eating slowed down. I got more curious about tastes. I didn't eat as much because I slowed down and I let my stomach catch up to myself. If I'm unlovable, I eat fast. I gobble food down. I eat more than I need to. So it's really interesting because in the workshop, this retreat we're going to be doing, I'm actually going to ask you and Marina that I go first in the belief process. And then we start to weave in how people feel different in their bodies and how they eat and nutrition. And that's when you feed in, how are you feeling now? How does nutrition take on a whole new hue? Now that you're lovable, you belong, you matter, I'm deserving, I get to be here, the world is safe.
Wow, which is amazing. It's a whole new experience because you're not trying to force connection with something that feels awful to be in. Now you're creating connection from an entirely different place.
When I was unlovable and I worked with clients, I would work really hard. I needed to give my clients like loads of value because I was not really feeling connected to them. So I just bombard them with value and I would work really, really hard. So there wasn't as much space as there could be to let them have their own answers. It was giving them their answers. When I became lovable and I really felt into it, all of a sudden there was all the space in the world for them to have their process and for me to show up authentically. And for me to allow them to have their own answers, my whole practice changed.
Wow.
The way I interface with clients changed. My ability to being a friend became way more authentic and way more real because I wasn't working so goddamn hard to make sure that you loved me.
Wow. So that does change everything. It changes the relationship with yourself, the relationship with your food, the relationship with other people. So is that the identity shift process, what you're talking about right there? Is that what it is? And how did you create that? How did you come up with this identity shift process?
So you are part of the community that I belong to. And in this community, we do a lot of really beautiful interpersonal work. And I think you are planning on coming out to the cabin this year.
I hope so. You've changed the dates a million times.
Yeah, I know. Well, that was Marina. I'm going to blame her. I don't know.
We'll discuss scheduling later. Go on. Okay. Carry on.
You're coming. But so we do a lot of really beautiful interpersonal work at the cabin. And it's just a really close knit group of friends. And in this particular sort of week, a lot of beliefs were coming up. A lot of like negative beliefs were coming up for a lot of people, including mine was as well. And so Marina, at one day, she gave us sort of two maps to work with. And one was, it's a map that it says belief colors and changes, feelings, thoughts, actions, words, results, and identity. And then she gave us another map and it's called the body, mind, spirit, heart wheel. And it sort of breaks down a human being in their sort of larger components, body, mind, spirit, and heart. And so because I had this new belief, I am lovable, I wanted to know what we could do with it. That was my whole question. And so she gave us these two maps and I was like, oh, so if I'm lovable, what does that do to my feelings now? How does it change them? What does it do to my thoughts? How does it change them? What does it do to my mind, my body, my spirit, my heart? And so that was the genesis of us, my friend and I, just working off those elements and asking the question, now that I'm lovable, what do I get to be with my heart? What do I get to do with it? What do I get to have with it? And if I go into my heart, if I'm lovable, I can trust my heart more. I can lean into it and trust its intuition. I can allow it to lead without being so afraid my heart's going to get broken. In fact, one of the things I realized is that we have this weird idea in our society that our hearts can be broken. The heart's the strongest muscle in the body, literally. And it lasts until we die. So it keeps ticking. So the heart isn't this feeble, shatterable entity. It's actually
dramatic story that we make it.
It's okay. Our expectations that shatter in relationship. It's not our heart. And so what I realized, because I'm lovable, I can lean into the strength of my heart, into the power of my heart, right? Mm. With my mind, the thing about me and anxiety, which is really interesting, my anxiety reduced probably about 50% when I became lovable, because when I entered into my body, I realized, oh my God, my whole life, part of my anxiety was my being trying to get me back into my body. Mm. If I'm disembodied, I will have a level of low-grade anxiety because I am living on the edges of my embodiment.
Wow. I mean, that makes so much sense, because just looking at it, the lens of your belief, how that would change your experience around relationship, that if you believe I am unlovable, that would create so much anxiety that if someone leaves you, then you're looking at it through the lens of it's true, I am truly unlovable. And that is like earth shattering. It's just a horrible feeling. But if you actually identity come from a place, shattering. Identity shattering, this is a truth. Mm-hmm. Where if you believe that you're lovable, then you're like, man, I'm going to miss this person. It's unfortunate. They're not right for me, but I'll still be loved by other people.
Good.
I'm good.
I'm good.
I'm okay. I'm whole.
I had a great experience with you.
It didn't work.
You.
It I'm still whole. Work.
I'm good.
Completely different experience in life while having the same experience, but the quality of life is entirely different through a different lens.
So with I'm unlovable and I'm living on the edges of my embodiment, my identity is fragile, super fragile. And so if you have a contrary opinion of me or we have conflict, I'm immediately going to start to brace and get really nervous. I might go on the attack. I might go into a shame spiral. Because I am on the edges of my embodiment. With I'm lovable, I'm good. Let's have a conversation. Are you angry with me? Cool. Let's hear about it. I want to hear about why I'm lovable. I'm good. So I want to hear about why you're angry with me.
It makes a lot of sense why intense emotions around like health and not eating well and relationships. And I think that they all tend to go hand in hand. I think that most of the people who are starting this work, they're also like, I have so many triggers in my relationship and I can't figure out what to do with it. And if you're coming from through this lens or this belief of I'm unlovable, then everything is just probably out of fear and reactive. And so it's like everything that you're doing is through that lens, which is why all these challenges come hand to hand. So it's like when you heal the belief around I'm unlovable, everything changes.
Everything changes. Body, mind, spirit, and heart. I mean, remember, it's a map. I wish I could show it to you, but there's a map that has body at the top, heart at the bottom. No, it's mind at the top, heart at the bottom, body to the left, and spirit to the right. And so it's a wheel. And so you put everything that you care about within that wheel. So I would say my working with clients, that would go into a body, heart, mind quadrant. My love for my house would go into a body spirit quadrant. Mm-hmm. So I would place everything, all the things that I care about, all the things that I love within that wheel. So it starts to help me identify where they go. And then I start to ask the questions, well, what does it do? Because I'm lovable, how does it change my craft? How does it change my relationship to my clients? And that's when I realized, oh my God, I get to just be me. And I don't have to work so hard. I can let you be you. I can listen more. I can create way more space in the session. And all of a sudden, the session just radically changed.
I actually had that same experience recently, I had this massive realization that I was like, how do I make my clients feel loved more and that they're enough and that they're all these things? And then I was like, and then I realized I met this amazing shaman from Peru. And he said, when you love yourself more, they'll feel more loved. And I like had this huge realization that that was a thing. I didn't have to anxiously like, oh, I need to do and fix them. It was like, when I fully feel whole, when I truly deeply feel and believe that I am whole and I'm loving myself from a whole place, then I'm not actually creating this energy of I have to do more for you or fix you or make you feel loved or do anything. I can actually just come from a place of wholeness and just allow them to be themselves, which creates a space of safety and that they are loved. And it's exactly everything that you said. And so my work has actually been, how do I every single day not think about what do I need to do to or for my clients, but how do I love myself bigger? And that wholeness changed everything.
You know how you get rocked in a day, you get rocked by a challenge, you get rocked by a relationship, right? Because we all do, right? We all have challenges. One of the beautiful things about this exercise after you're done with it is I go on sort of, I call them sort of identity shift walks. And so if something's hammered me, let's say I got into a fight with a friend, I will literally go on a walk and I'll say, because I'm lovable, how does it change my relationship to this fight? And I'm like, oh, wait, I get to lean back into myself. I get to take time for what the fight was about. I get to see how I want to approach it. Because I'm lovable, I get to actually pull back into myself and not react and not, oh my God, or do all the things, the unlovable things, like, oh, I need to now get you to love me, which is inauthentic. I get to actually lean back into myself and say, how do I want to approach this? How do I want to have the next conversation with his friend? What do I want to do? And how do I love them? Right. And how did we challenge each other? Cause we step on each other's stuff sometimes and we don't realize it. So we're like, oh, because I'm lovable, the relationship comes out of love. I just need to figure out what I stepped on. And if I can get humble to it, great. I can get humble to it. Awesome. Because I'm lovable, easy to get humble to something. If I'm unlovable, sometimes humility is really, really scary because I don't want to do that because I'm fragile, right?
You actually shared something really powerful with me too. And we were on the phone one day and you were sharing with me about how your belief process can really help people heal the relationship to food and how does that get integrated. And I remember you saying, because I am lovable, I can trust myself with food. And I remember really letting that sink in, and I let that sit with me that like after we got off the phone, I was like, okay, I'm going to see how this actually really feels and sitting with my food and being like, because I am lovable, because I am enough, because I am all these, what the wholeness,
I matter, I belong,
because I matter, I can trust myself with food and like how whole that feels and how calming to the nervous system that is. It's amazing.
It slows everything down. I realize that because I'm lovable, I get to actually let time unfold naturally and either not rush it or procrastinate it. I actually move in time more. So when I'm lovable, I get to just take a moment with my food. Be like, look at this bounty. Like, look where this came from. I don't know if you do that with your clients, but I will often slow people down and be like, that peach came from a tree that was grown by the sun. Like, that kind of blows me away. And if I'm lovable, I slow down to the things that really matter about the food and about this nutrition and about just enjoyment of it. And I want to enjoy life more. I'm unlovable. Oh God, I'm either racing through it, I'm procrastinating it, or I might be more in fear of it or doubt of it or whatever. I will tell you that my relationship to everything has changed. I know that sounds like a blanket statement, but it's actually just true.
Yeah.
I was on fire for like, I would call Blake, a friend of ours. I would call Blake and I'd be like, how you doing, buddy? And he's like, I'm good. How are you? I go, I'm great. I feel great. Right. And he goes, oh my God, you sound great. I go, no, I feel great. And we would talk about all the crazy shifts that we had gone through. after this week at the cabin, after this process. And you just can't imagine how, again, the anxiety piece, I can't tell you, I just don't have anxiety as much anymore. I'm good.
Yeah. And you know, actually, so Blake was one of the first people who pointed out to me, who helped me connect the dots between anxiety and productivity. I just was tied up internally like a rope and I didn't know why and I couldn't understand it. And I was living in, I just don't have enough time. I'd wake up at 5 a.m., super anxious, go to the gym, do all these things. And I'd go to bed with anxiety every night, feeling like I didn't do enough. And I remember he asked me the question very blatantly. He's like, "Do you love yourself?" And I was like, I never had to think of
that.
Yeah, of course I do. Yeah, I was like, of course. But literally, I was like, of course I do. And he's like, "What do you love about yourself?" And I'm like, "Oh, I'm super motivated. I've done all these things that I'm proud of myself for. I love that like exercise is important to me." And da da da. And he's like, "Yeah, none of that's actually love. Those are all conditions. Like you're conditionally loving yourself." And it like broke my mind.
If you don't love yourself, there's no love.
You don't
love yourself.
Exactly. So of course I was going to fill up every moment of my day of things that made me feel like I was loving myself. And I could see why I never had enough time and there was anxiousness and it just completely shifted my relationship to start asking these bigger questions of what is love, what is conditions, and like, what does it actually really mean? So everything was fast. The way that I ate was fast. My life was fast. Everything was full. Mm-hmm. Nothing was enough time. And so like you said, when I healed that relationship to it, life became more spacious. And it's like, it's okay if I work out one day and if I don't another day, or if I take care of myself in another way, because I'm still enough. I love myself even more that I'm taking care of myself and have my own back. Funny story. This is unrelated to anybody listening, but just last week I flew back from the airport, from Costa Rica, had a layover in Denver and ran into Blake at the airport.
Oh my God. Did you?
Yeah.
That guy, he's
funny story. He's everywhere. But yeah, so it's amazing to have these people who can really be amazing mirrors. And I think everything that you said has been so valuable on looking for clues of like, where does anxiety show up and how is it influencing your life or your lens, and giving a lot of really such amazing perspectives to start asking these bigger questions. And I think people can be so powerful. People like you who have already been there, who have done it, who can be a guide in asking and helping unpack these bigger questions. Because I think without you guys, I would have stayed in my own false perceptions of what truth actually is and not actually seeing these core wounds that are actually driving my experience and my beliefs. So it's really all beautiful.
The conditional piece, I do this, I'm level because I do this and I do this and I do this. What I realized is that the reason we call it the identity shift process is it goes from a negative core belief to an identity. I believe that I'm unlovable goes to I believe I'm unlovable to I believe I am unlovable goes to I am lovable, which is a state shift. It's no longer a belief. It is an I am. There's no conditions on it. I just am lovable. I matter. It's funny when you do this process too, it works out a cluster of other beliefs. And so can you see how if I'm unlovable, I matter? And if I'm lovable, I belong. If I'm lovable, I'm deserving. So it works out this whole other cluster of beliefs that are sort of sisters and brothers to it. And I don't know if you know this, but I'm going to be doing a belief identity workshop in Brazil in March.
Whoa, I didn't know that. I knew you were going to Brazil. You're all over the world. You're going to Europe. I know you're teaching in Europe and Brazil. You are all over the place, which is amazing.
And Costa Rica. We'll Costa Rica. And then have you heard of the Tassis School?
Mm-mm.
The Swiss school in Costa Rica. There's a potential chance we might be working there with that school.
Oh, amazing. Keep me updated on that.
Yeah. So I'm excited, but I'm really excited for our workshop. I'm really excited.
Wow.
End of April, we're doing it.
Wow. So you have private clients, you're doing workshops all over the world. I think our retreat, our first one that we're doing together, will be in the States. We're firming up our details, but most likely in Utah.
End of April,
most likely in Utah. It's going to be beautiful, intimate, lots of amazing work.
It's going to be bougie. There's going to be a chef. It's going to be yummy food. There's going to be amazing people. The belief process we will be doing. So if any of your listeners are interested in it, it's going to be an action-packed, was it 3-4 days?
I think so. About 4 days. We'll have all the details. I'll put the link in the show notes as soon as I have it ready. So stay open if you guys want to actually do this work in person with Will, with myself, with Marina. Will, is there anything that you want to leave people with?
Know that you are not your anxiety. A lot of people, you have it enough, you start to identify with it. It becomes an identity. You're not your anxiety. Your anxiety is just pointing to something that you care about that has chaos to it, that needs to be organized and have certainty around it. And your anxiety is also pointing out that there's a level of disembodiment going on that can easily be shifted. So you're not your anxiety, and your anxiety can be changed. And it has a lot to teach you, a lot. And the moment you learn from it, anxiety goes away. It's kind of what happens.
So good. I appreciate this.
I'm a testament of that.
Yes. And as am I too. I really do. I try to share my journey so honestly and openly with everyone that, you know, years ago, I was wound up anxious like a rope. And sure, sometimes maybe an anxious thought comes in, but like there's so much spaciousness in my body. It shifted the way that I eat, the way that I live and exist with so much more presence and calm and connection. And you've definitely been a big part of that. So thank you, Will. And thank you for being here. This has been an amazing conversation. Yeah. This has been so good. So much wisdom. You guys, if you had any insights today, any big ahas, I love it when people send me messages and they're like, oh my gosh, this is what resonated with me. I had no idea. Or just sometimes these things can just break open your mindset or your beliefs or what you think. So if you had anything interesting today, feel free to shoot me an email or a DM on Instagram. Will, where can people find you?
Oh, yeah. So I'm at willethridge.com. And we can just give you my email too, if you want to reach out, because I do individual sessions too with belief process and other things. This is only one thing I do. I do loads of other things, but I do work with individuals and groups on that. So but great. Reach out. Love to have you.
I'll put Will's information in the show notes, his website and contact information, and feel free to reach out to Will. And I'll also keep you guys updated on our upcoming retreat this year. It's going to be amazing. So thank you guys for listening. Thank you, Will, for being here.
Absolutely. I loved it.
We'll see you guys next time.